This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. YouTube has been taking down some of the questions and comments because they think what I'm saying about Israel is somehow upsetting or disturbing to some people. What's going on campuses, that's okay. But for me to say what I say on YouTube apparently creates problems. So if any of you want to write me comments, at least for the moment, send it to me on X. My name on X is at Alan Dersh, just at A-L-A-N-D-E-R-S-H. So we'll get all your comments on X or on Rumble, but we're not going to get them on YouTube. Today we're going to talk about what's going on Columbia, University of Texas, University of Southern California, and 20 or so other schools around the country. I entitled the show Mind Compass. Mind Compass, I guess, is Harvard. That was my campus, the one I was at for over 50 years. And Harvard isn't as bad as some of the other schools, but there's still no Harvard Law School professors who are prepared to stand up for Jewish students and take any courageous stands. That's Harvard, and that's professors mostly all over the country. To tell you, I've never met a group of less courageous people in my life than tenured full professors who are terrified to speak out on any unpopular issues, on any issues that will drive down their student evaluations or make them ineligible for prizes. What is tenure all about? If teachers with tenure are afraid to speak out. And it's a shameful thing, but it's something I experienced over 50 years. People would talk very bravely at lunch when nobody was around. But when they had to say anything publicly, well, on the one hand, on the other hand, let me be very scholarly about this. Let me be very balanced. But people were really terrified about saying anything. So Mind Compass, who's funding these illegal campus takeovers? We're watching on television, literally as we speak, hundreds of students at Columbia University defying the order by the university and the university's president to end the campus takeover that is blocking students from going to class. And these are students who are trying to prevent graduation from occurring. A friend of mine is supposed to get an honorary doctorate, but because he's Jewish, there will be protests against him and the other Jew who was supposed to get honorary doctorates. It's like what happened in Germany in 1933. Jews couldn't get honorary doctorates, and Jews were being blocked from attending classes. And that's happening at Columbia. And the university president put down a red line. And then, like President Biden with Syria, he just ignored the red line. And as a result of that, credibility is lost and deterrence is eliminated. And students now think they run the university and they're not going to listen to any orders. At University of Texas, students have been arrested. At Columbia University, even their suspensions, the original suspensions, were rescinded. And if you think any of them will be prosecuted by a Bragg who's too busy prosecuting Donald Trump for a non-crime, he won't prosecute any of these kids because he doesn't want to offend people on his side of the political spectrum. So what we're seeing is a real, real lawlessness. So the question is, who's paying for all this? You know, tents have suddenly sprung up on college campuses all over the country. Pre-published signs, pre-printed signs were distributed, and they're all the same, and they all have the same message. These were well organized, and who organized them? Well, you'll be shocked to know who's paying for some of these things. You know, you don't think of John D. Rockefeller as a radical leftist. He was obviously a right-wing capitalist, the personification of right-wing capitalism. His son or grandson, I forget which, Rocky, Governor Rockefeller, was conservative. I know I was part of the campaign by Arthur Goldberg against him. But the Rockefeller Brothers Fund has become a source of hard left, radical, anarchistic, and anti-Semitic operations. The Rockefeller Brothers Fund is now supporting financially organizations that are anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, and anti-American. One of the trustees of the fund is an old acquaintance of mine, Peter Beinhart, who grew up as an Orthodox Jew and went to a Jewish school and now has become one of the most virulent, toxic, anti-Semitic and anti-Zionist and anti-Israel people in America. You know, he was a failed academic, wasn't doing very well. He was a failed journalist, he wasn't doing very well. And he decided he needed a niche. So he developed a niche. His niche was, hey, I'm Jewish. My kids go to Jewish school. I wear a kippah sometimes. And I am more anti-Zionist and more anti-Israel than anybody. That's has been his shtick and his bit. And of course, it earned him great accolades. He became a contributing editor at the New York Times. He writes drivel. He never would have gotten a job at the New York Times if he was pro-Israel. So he was smart, clever, opportunistic. And he became a talking dog. What's a talking dog? A talking dog is a Jew who was so strongly opposed to Israel that, wow, a talking dog. Wow, a guy from Yeshiva, an Orthodox Jew who was so anti-Israel. So, and that talking dog has managed to capitalize on his act. I don't even know whether he believes it or not. I'm just not sure. I've debated him on numerous occasions. I can say I really whipped his rear on all the occasions. He's not much of a debater, and he's not much of a writer. But the New York Times wants him because he's a Jewish anti-Israel. And the Rockefeller Brothers Fund wants him. So he now he's a trustee of the Rockefeller Fund, and he's one of those people who decides who gets the money. So who's getting the money? Getting the money is anti-Zionist, anti-Israel, and anti-Semitic groups. Same thing is true of George Soros funding. George Soros is another. He was a Jew who helped the Nazis during the Holocaust, a Jew who hates Israel, hates Zionism, and who really hates Jews. Again, another example of an anti-Semitic Jew. And his foundation helps to fund Jewish Voice for Peace. Now, you know, everybody says Jewish Voice for Peace. What a wonderful named organization. You know, it's like reading the Communist Party's constitution. It was terrific. It was better than our constitution. Of course, nobody ever abided by anything in it, but it gave all these terrific rights. Jewish Voice for Peace. Wow, it's Jewish and it's for peace. No, neither. It's not Jewish. Its members, only some of them are Jewish. Many of them are not. They just took the name instead of calling themselves anarchist communists who hate America and hate Israel. That wouldn't be much of a title. Jewish Voice for Peace. Wow. CNN says, oh, we're interviewing Jewish people now. Jewish Voice for Peace. No, they're not Jewish and they're not for peace. And they don't use their voice. They use violence and they use threats and they use intimidation and they use hate speech. So that's Jewish Voice for Peace, funded in large part by these kinds of foundations. And so those are the people who are now funding these anti-Israel activities. Students for Justice for Palestine is funded both by some of these organizations and by foreign anti-American organizations. And I think it's time for a really good journalist to look inside these organizations, find out precisely what percentage of Jewish Voice for Peace are Jews and what percentage are just pretending. And look at the board and the trustees of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. I think Rockefeller would be turning over in his grave. The Ford Foundation also. Now, this is at least appropriate. Henry Ford was a virulent anti-Semite. He wrote all these books that Hitler loved and magazines, the Dearborn Independent. So he hated Jews. He was an overt anti-Semite. And now the Ford Foundation is becoming pretty overtly anti-Semitic. I have to admit they've paid for a couple of things I did. They recruited me, basically, sent me to China to look at human rights. That was before they were taken over by the hard left. And so the Ford Foundation now also funds anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, anti-Zionist, anti-American activities. And the time has come to look into some of these organizations. Do the people who contribute to them know what they're contributing to? Do the people who have funded them, the families of Ford and Rockefeller and others, do they know what's being funded? I doubt it very, very much. So what we're seeing is, and the other thing, the source of funding, is many Arab countries. Qatar funds American universities, many Middle East studies departments. Let's look into Columbia's Middle East Studies Department. You know, I tried to prevent Joseph Mossad from getting tenure at Columbia, I don't know, a dozen or so years ago. And this was before he had tenure, when he could have been fired. Apparently, according to the reports that we heard, he called on a student. The student started to answer, and Professor Mossad said, he's an Arab, I think a Palestinian, but I'm not sure. Professor Mossad said, "Sounds from your voice that you might be Israeli, are you?" And the student said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, if you're an Israeli, you can't speak in my class unless you're willing to admit that you committed war crimes." Now, if any professor ever pulled off something like that against an African-American student or against a gay student, it was a professor at Penn who was suspended for the following reason. He's teaching the 14th Amendment, 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, which, you know, obviously was designed to free the slaves and give them complete equality. And a student didn't know what the 14th Amendment said. And the professor at Penn turned to the student, who was black, and said, "You of all people ought to know what's in the 14th Amendment." And he got suspended for that. "You of all people ought to know what's in the 14th Amendment. For that, you get suspended. But for calling on an Israeli student and saying you can't speak unless you're willing to admit you committed war crimes, for that, you get promoted to tenure." That's Columbia University, the same university that hired Kathy Boudin, the woman convicted of murdering two policemen, destroying families, murdering two Brinks guards in order to bring about the revolution and bring about the end of America. What happens to her when she finishes serving her term and gets pardoned or commuted? I forget which. She gets hired by Columbia to teach probably the very students who are out there now creating all these problems and engaged in all these illegal activities. So what I've said before, I'm going to say again, there is a fifth column in this country, and they are marching at the University of Texas, at Columbia University, at Michigan, at Princeton, at Yale, at Harvard, at many of these universities. Some of them, just some, not all, hopefully only a few, but all you need is a few, will turn from protesters to terrorists. It's not a long jump from "we are Hamas" to "we will help Hamas." It's not a long term from jump from saying "we praise Hamas rockets" to planting Hamas rockets and planting Hamas bombs. It's not a long jump from a student leader who says he wants to run for Congress, saying Zionists don't deserve to live and I would be happy if Zionists died, to killing Zionists, to taking action, to becoming terrorists. That's what happened in the 1960s and 70s. A few dozen, maybe a few hundred, not many much more than that, but it's all you needed, tried to blow up the University of Wisconsin, tried to blow up Fort Dix, did blow up a townhouse on 12th Street. Kathy Boudin was in that townhouse on 12th Street where they were preparing to make anti-personnel bombs, bombs with nails, which would kill as many people and wound as many people as possible. American soldiers, your children, these were what these people were doing. They'll do it again. This time it will be the students, some of them, and the outside agitators who are marching on university campuses today. They will not stop, all of them, just at marching and demonstrating. They're now breaking the law. They could be arrested for trespassing if they refuse to leave. But will the university have the courage to do that? Unclear. The president of Columbia gave a red line, and apparently she's not complying with the red line. It just means that it'll be worse and worse, and probably there won't be a graduation. Two people I know were supposed to get honorary degrees at the graduation. They're both Jewish, and the students plan to protest Jewish people getting honorary degrees because maybe they had some association with Israel. They're Americans. They're Americans. One of them teaches at a school in Georgia. The other one, I forget, is a real estate developer or something. Honorary degrees. And they're going to be protested if there is a graduation. You know, it's interesting. I was protested a few years ago. I was offered an honorary degree at Brandeis University by the president. Then the president called me a few days later and said, we have to withdraw our offer because a group of students have said we will protest. You're too pro-Israel. I'm in favor of the two-state solution. I'm a moderate. But we will protest if you get an honorary degree. And the president of the school said, we don't want to disrupt our graduation. And so we're going to withdraw our request to you. Brandeis University capitulated to a dozen or so radical anti-Israel students and withheld an honorary degree from me. I hope Columbia doesn't do the same. I have urged these people to accept the honorary degree. I offer to go there and cheer him on for getting the honorary degree if he accepts it. He'll need security, though. His life will be in danger because people will threaten him because he's an American of Israeli origin, although he's an American citizen and he teaches at an American university. But because he's Jewish and has a connection to Israel, hey, that's enough to disqualify him from getting an honorary doctorate. That's the reality of what's going on today at universities. And so the question is, are these demonstrations all spontaneous? Well, they become spontaneous. Of course, everybody wants to join, every college student wants to join a demonstration. What's going to college without having been arrested for joining a demonstration? I think I mentioned once before that I had a friend who was an extreme right winger. He belonged to the Jewish Defense League. And then suddenly he became an extreme left winger. He became a communist. And I asked him, why did he change from being an extreme right winger to an extreme left winger? He said the sex was easier, that you were much more likely to get sex if you were an extremist on the left side than on the right side. I'm not saying everybody does it for sex, but many, many of these useful idiots, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know that they're demonstrating in favor of Hamas that murders gay people and that throws dissidents off the roof and that murders transgender people and that discriminates against women. They have no idea. They're just joining a demonstration. And some of them saying, we're doing it for free speech. Nonsense. Would they join a demonstration for free speech for pro-Israel activists? No, of course not. And these faculty members who are encouraging their students to break the law and to violate university policies, those are grounds for denying a professor tenure or withdrawing tenure if you violate the rules of the university. But will Columbia do it? No, of course not. They're negotiating. That's been the biggest problem we have of negotiating with terrorists or negotiating with radical law violators. Columbia should have stepped in immediately. No class should ever be canceled because of protesters. No graduation should ever be canceled because of protesters. The school should call in as much security as necessary, escort Jewish students to class the way Black students were escorted to class in the 1950s and the 1960s. You don't let racists and bigots, whether they be Southern anti-Black bigots or Northern Columbia student anti-Semitic and anti-Jewish bigots, you don't let bigots get their way and destroy a university or prevent students from going to class or prevent people from graduating. You know, people want to enjoy graduation. They want to take pride in what their children have accomplished. And there are going to be a lot of people, even if Columbia conducts this graduation, if it carries through with its threats to deny certification and to suspend students academically if they didn't comply with the order of the university, there are going to be students who won't graduate. Good, good. I think they should be expelled. Any student who calls for genocide against Jews, any student who says, I am Hamas, any student who says, I want to make sure that there are 10,000 October 7ths. They may have a right to say it, but they have no right to be a student. They have no right to be at a university. Apply the same rule you would apply if people said, we want 10,000 lynchings of blacks. Apply the same rules you would apply if people said, we're going to send gays to the gas chambers. No, you're not applying the same rule. You're applying a different rule for Jews. That's not acceptable. You cannot apply a different rule for Jews. Now, Elie Wiesel said, and we all know this, that, you know, first they come for the Jews, but the Jews are the first, but they're never the last. Hamas is coming to a theater near you. There will be Hamas violence in the United States if these lawless activities are permitted. And some of the people who are engaged in these lawless activities will engage in violence against Jews and against non-Jews. This student who was suspended by Columbia, thankfully, after he was caught on videotape saying Zionists should not be allowed to live, just like Nazis should not be allowed to live, and racists and fascists shouldn't be allowed to live. Zionists shouldn't be allowed to live, and I wouldn't be upset if the Zionists died. A student like that is very likely to take the next step and say, you know, if they shouldn't live, what can I do about that? Well, I can help kill them. And would you want a student like that in your dormitory? Would you want a student like that in your daughter's dormitory if your daughter was Jewish? I don't think so. Would you want your daughter, if she was Jewish and in a dorm, to have an Israeli flag on her door or a mezuzah, the symbol of God that Jews wear, that Jews put on their doors, to identify themselves as Jews? Would you want your son to wear a kippah if he were an Orthodox Jew, and if he lived in the same dorm as this person who said Zionists shouldn't be allowed to live? I don't think so. And so let's look at who's funding. Let's look at Mein Kampus, and that's what's going on at Columbia. It has become Mein Kampus. It has become a place where a Nazi is more comfortable than a Jew. It's become a place where anti-Jewish racists fit more comfortably than Jewish anti-racists. And that's a scandal. That's a scandal. And it has to stop. And if they don't stop it, we have to do something about it. Okay, let's look at some letters that are coming in today. What do you think about a bill introduced to deny Secret Service protection for persons convicted of crime? Sounds like a care message at Trump to be killed if the bag prosecution ends in the conviction of Trump. It's outrageous, of course. It doesn't matter whether you've been convicted of a non-crime, which is what he's being charged with in Manhattan, or even if you're convicted of a serious crime. Of course you get Secret Service protection. Secret Service protection is not a reward. Secret Service protection is designed to protect America, to protect the election process, to make sure that no person running for office is attacked physically. And of course, Trump, if he's convicted, should get Secret Service protection. And Bobby Kennedy should get Secret Service protection, even though the Biden administration has refused him Secret Service protection. He, you know, his father was killed. His uncle was killed. The Kennedy name is an invitation to crazy people coming after people. And remember, too, that his father, Robert Kennedy, was killed by Sirhan Sirhan because he supported Israel. And Bobby Kennedy supports Israel. He's the most pro-Israel candidate running. He and John Fetterman have been the two people who have been spoken out most righteously and most honestly in support of Israel over and above any other candidates for office today. And let's make sure they're both adequately protected. Professor, it appears that the students who have faced disciplinary action for their roles in the pro-Hamas protests want to have negotiations to waive the penalties against them in return for disbanding their presence on the campuses. Do you think the various college administrations will cave into their demands? Yes, they will. They will, and they are. And even negotiating with students about whether they continue to violate the law is a serious mistake. You don't negotiate with criminals. You don't negotiate with people who are breaking the law. You stop them from breaking the law. And you punish them if they persist in breaking the law. Professor, a student at Columbia University named Kimani James, he's the one I talked about, made a video before and after the disciplinary hearings in which he said he was comfortable calling for all Jews to Zionists to be killed, etc. Is this no longer free speech? And in good fact, the threat of extreme violence that should be prosecuted? It is a threat of extreme violence. It's a close question. It's not a close question for a university, public or private. Universities have a right to set up rules that deny students the right to harass other students and make other students feel physically unsafe. No ideas are safe at a university, but physical safety must be assured at every American university, and universities have the power, even under the First Amendment, to assure that physical threats not be made against students based on their religion or race. Again, ask the question, what would the school do if a student said, Black people should not be allowed to live, gay people should not be allowed to live? There are people in this country who say that, and nobody would accept that on a university campus. The same rules have to apply in regard to Jewish students. I call upon all the Jewish students at Columbia University to band together and file a multi-billion dollar class action lawsuit against Columbia University. That's right, I said multi-billion. Look, I do think that the students at Columbia do have the right to band together and file a class action lawsuit about returning of their tuition. They did not get what they bargained for. The tuition is supposed to be in-class instruction. This isn't COVID. This is something the school could control and they didn't control. And I think students have the right to get their tuition back, at least a partial refund of their tuition, if they were denied the right to attend classes as they happened. Where's the FBI, the intelligence community, the Department of Justice? Oh, they're after Trump, monitoring parents who want to have a say in their children's education and making sure men can compete in women's sports. Okay, we can combine all the politics into this. I want to keep this non-political. I want to make sure that this gets bipartisan support. I believe the vast majority of Americans, Democrat and Republican, are appalled at what's being said on college campuses today. And we're going to see that, I think, in reduced admission applications to some American universities. I saw that Brandeis University has extended the date for transfer so that students can transfer there and be in a safer environment. Okay, just a matter of time until Hamas and Hamas sympathizers will kill people in the United States. This is why you don't disarm the public when the public is in danger. The police cannot protect us. People show up after the murders are committed. That's a good question. A number of people have called me and asked me, do you have a gun? I'm not going to say, because I don't want to give anybody an excuse for coming after me. But there are friends who've come to me and said, should we buy a gun? Should we seek to protect ourselves? One of my first cases ever, I think it was 1971 or something like that, very early in my career, I defended the Jewish Defense League, and their slogan was "Every Jew at 22," they did believe in arming Jews and Jews learning self-defense. They had a camp up in the Catskill Mountains where they taught self-defense techniques and they taught shooting. I hope we never come to that. I hope Jews in this country will never need to be armed. If they choose to be armed, that's their right under the Second Amendment. But I would hope that the police would adequately protect Jews. You know, a group of lawyer friends of mine started an organization called Hit a Jew, We Sue You, because the police don't go after everybody who attacks a Jew, but a civil lawyer can. Anybody who's attacked based on their religion should call us, and we'll sue on your behalf. Nobody should be able to get away with what's going on in parts of Brooklyn, where particularly Hasidic Jews who are very visibly Jewish because of the garb they wear are often attacked by African Americans and by other minorities, and but mostly African Americans in Crown Heights and in Williamsburg and other places. And they shouldn't get away with it. And anybody who does hit a Jew or hit anybody else, there should be consequences. And right now I worry that we live in a consequence-free world. We live in a world where Columbia students could break the law, where the University of Texas students could break the law. At least in Texas, some of them have been arrested. At Columbia, I don't think we're going to see any arrests. So We'll see what happens. Stay tuned. This is very much a situation that is unfolding, that's unpredictable, but that I will venture a prediction. It's going to get worse. See you tomorrow.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.